Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 1st of September, recording at 8:58 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. But first, as is traditional, I do a quick review of the week. Stock markets, very firm, and that's continued in here today. Government bonds, also very firm, and that has continued today. U.S. dollar, bit soft. Interestingly, gave up a rally that we saw earlier today and moved to the minus side. I'm just hesitating there. Yep, pretty much to the minus side against everything. Not a lot, but it doesn't do a lot these days. And metals, precious metals, definitely a firmer tone in here this week, led by silver. Industrial metals, steady within their medium-term corrections. And soft commodities, we've seen some somewhat better action in the grains and the interesting cocoa situation. That had a pretty good day in here today. That's the Robusta. Did I say cocoa? Coffee. I'm talking about coffee. I can't get my drinks right. But the coffee that Owen had bought last month quite successfully, and that I picked up a little bit of the other day, that's still looking perky in here today, although it's quite volatile within a range. Okay, so big picture long-term outlook. Well, let's work out from the short-term review that I just gave to the medium-term. My mail and the reports, including the reports that I receive, and when I say my mail, these email services that come in, and some of the commentary from subscribers is decidedly weighted on the bearish side. Well, there are no knowers out there, as we know, but I've really got to regard the preponderance of evidence, particularly the various different services that come in, the various different reports, as a contrary indicator, because I don't. I would do that normally. People are very bearish, but analytically, to be a little bit more analytical than that, I want to compare it to what's actually happening in the markets, and the action has been awfully good, very consistent, very orderly, and I'm beginning to feel that some of this bearish commentary is coming from people who are willing the market back down so that they can go back in at lower levels, now I'll stop there on that. But again, the European market's leading the rally, but Asia's been doing well. Wall Street's doing well. Another good day in here today. So it's going to take some fairly negative evidence. Nine people can be sending in saying, well, there's going to be a hedge fund disaster. Well, not if markets are moving up fairly steadily in here. People are saying the U.S. economy's going to go into a recession because of a severe downturn in the U.S. housing market. Well, the bond market is helping the borrowers, and do we really expect the housing to go up every single month? Well, I certainly don't. Sure, it's overheated. Sure, it's getting a correction, and yeah, it'll probably be a bigger correction than people have seen in quite some time. But I don't think that's anything to be in a panic about, or to avoid or to debase a stock market view on at this stage. And as I think I've said before, I've heard about more property crashes in the last few years that haven't happened. I don't want to sound complacent. I don't want to be flippant, appear flippant about it. But if we have an environment where money supply remains quite abundant, And it certainly does. And if we have an environment where real interest rates are on the historic side of, well, on the medium to lower side of their historic range, and we do, and if we have an environment where governments seem more interested in extending growth than and are looking over their shoulder for deflationary pressures, despite the what has been the sort of short-term focus on the inflation that they created, to my mind, that's not an environment against which we're going, within which we're going to see a property market crash. Overextended, pullback, some people get hurt, of course. That's, we've seen that happen before. So again, getting back to the stock markets, the action is good, and I'd be a fool to be ignoring that overall. Everything continues to suggest to me that this is nothing more than a medium-term correction. If the facts change in terms of what's showing on the charts, well, then I'll change my mind. But they tend to reinforce rather that view, not to contradict it. What do I like the most in here in terms of stock markets? Well, I think that in terms of most promising growth potential, best long-term prospects, for me it's got to be Asia. And I prefer emerging Asia, and India is really right at the top of the tree in terms of what I like. Another market, and I put up a chart of the Aberdeen New Thai Fund and as well as the India Fund. I added a little bit more to my JP Morgan India position in here today. But the Thai market, here we have a market where the index is showing a PE of 9, and we have a dividend yield of, I think, over 4.3% on that index. And some of the reports that I come in talk about people rubbing their hands and saying, well, we can't wait until, or we expect Wall Street to get back to those single-figure multiples for the S&P and yields of 4% or more. Well, we've already got that on Thailand. Why isn't that a running up in response to that? Well, because of all the tax and related, Shinawatra tax and related political concerns. I don't want to digress too much on this, but in a nutshell, he seems to still have sufficient popular support to get elected, whereas some of the opposition parties don't quite seem to be the Democrats that we would hope they are, in the sense that they find Thaksin's election or the prospect of that he would be reelected unacceptable. So that's an impasse, but it'll be resolved, and then my guess is that Thailand will play catch up very, very quickly. But the point really to mention, and that's just one example of where we have some excellent valuations in stock markets. People might say, well, but wait a minute, we're going to see a major slowdown in global GDP growth. Will we? Well, I think we'll see a modest slowdown in global GDP growth, and quite possibly some economies aren't even going to blink. What you could say recently is we've seen the European economy is actually doing a bit better. So I smell the fear in the air, and you know, it'd have to be a bloodhound to be able to pick up that scent. But where's the beef? It's not reflected in the technical evidence that I see. And as I said earlier in this broadcast, I'd be a fool to ignore that. But again, I like the emerging Asia, and I like the resources sector still. That may take longer in terms of its overall consolidations because it just did so well over the previous years. And there are, again, questions over the sustainability about the metal prices that we actually see. But frankly, over and over again, from quarter to quarter, we see better profits coming out of those companies than anybody had been forecasting. And I'm still a big believer in the commodity super cycle. So, commodity-related markets, Asian emerging markets, and other emerging markets subject to governance, they appeal to me a great deal. I don't think Wall Street and Europe are going to develop. Europe are going to be disaster areas by any means, but they're not going to outperform the Asian emerging markets and these resources-based emerging markets, in my view, or the resources-based developing markets, for that matter. Okay, government bonds. They're in stellar form in here, getting a very good technical rally, and that does reflect the cautious to bearish views that have been expressed about markets that I've just been talking about. I think it also reflects evidence that some of the inflationary pressures are abating somewhat. Now, you know my view on inflation, that we're in a cycle, a long-term cycle, where inflationary pressures will gradually pick up because central banks will err on the side of inflation more often than not, not least because of the disinflationary pressures caused by globalization. We see that mostly in manufacturing goods, prices for manufacturing goods, where the competition is even more intense than just about anywhere else. But hey, we've still got a synchronized global economic recovery. We have all of these developing nations which were previously moribund, China, India, and so many others with big populations that are getting their capitalistic act together and doing extremely well. That's relates back to the bull theme I've been talking about in terms of equities, but it also adds some inflation to the system overall. Hopefully not enough to cause really serious problems, but it may be enough to cause some stagflation in the developing world from time to time, although not at the moment. But government bonds, supply's too big, yields aren't attractive enough, and we have what I regard as this basically overall inflationary environment. So technical rallies when people are concerned about stock markets and global GDP growth, sure. Sure. But they're not really all that sustainable. And if one were putting money in markets here today, I would much rather have the equities than the bonds. Now, again, as I've said repeatedly in these broadcasts, should I buy the government bonds or sell the government bonds short? Well, if you put a pistol to my head, I would still be on the buy side. But I think that we're at least two-thirds of the way through this rally. I can't be more specific than that. And US dollar downward bias. The US wants a softer dollar. They need it to sustain the growth, to help what they hope will help the current account deficit, may help it a wee bit overall, but mainly to sustain the growth. US, the best known story in the world is that the US has these big debt figures overall and deficit figures, but how are they going to deal with it? They're going to try to grow their way out of it. I've said it all along, and I think all the evidence points to that. And that is an environment in which the US will want to see the dollar gradually move lower. I don't expect any big crises, but I think that somewhat softer dollar, somewhat firmer European currencies, somewhat firmer Asian currencies, fundamentally the best backing underpinnings, I should say, is for the Asian currencies, but of course they go to great lengths to prevent their currencies from rising. And that's a global game. It's been going on for years and years. So I've said so many times, no country wants a strong currency, but some want a weak currency more than others, and also have the economic conditions that can help to achieve that aim. And if not, they print more. Goes back to the ties back in with the inflation theme, doesn't it? So that makes me a big bull of the precious metals. They're in a medium-term consolidation here right now, but from my standpoint, whenever those precious metals get a shakeout, that's a great buying opportunity. I'll try to play it on that on that basis, and I maintain that in the overall environment that we have, that gold will outperform the outperform the Dow Jones Industrial Average, outperform government bonds more years than it doesn't. So I am still quite bullish, and of course the proxy precious metals will probably do even better. So that would be silver for sure, platinum, and palladium, which is one of the ones that I like the most at today's prices. Gold's always a bit political, and that can hold it back. Okay, industrial metals, very big bull story here. Again, though, the gains have been so spectacular that many of these are in medium-term corrections that can really last quite a while. Year, 2 years, even up to 3 years. But then you see how those long trading ranges are resolved. And we had nearly a 3 year consolidation rather, in the nickel market, and it's gone on to score spectacular gains. And tin is getting a similar type of consolidation. Must have been in the pattern for at least 2 years. And I expect that to be resolved by a breakout on the upside. I maintain we're in a secular bull market. Why? Well, because of all this infrastructure building that's going on in the third world, because of all the growth those economies are producing, those big population countries are producing, and the West isn't doing all that bad either. So we have far, far more economic growth relative to the supply, if we take in all these developed economies, relative to the supply of these industrial commodities, than has been the case previously. That's basically a rough outline of the commodity supercycle. And of course, you've seen plenty of data, or you can find plenty of data on the website that's related to that. Agricultural commodities. Well, you really want to see some supply problems there to cause those to lift off a bit. That's happened with coffee recently, as Owen has pointed out, and some of the European grain contracts are doing quite well. But it's a much trickier arena. You see some of these mouth-watering gains from time to time. They're never sustained for all that long because of crop cycles, which can increase the supply fairly rapidly. But it takes a bit of nerve and good chart reading and so on to pick up those opportunities. We'll try to spot as many of them as we can for you, and of course for ourselves. And we share the same interest. Didn't mention energy. The action in the oil market is bordering on the bearish. I've seen some fairly bearish reports coming out on oil charts from people. I think it's a little bit premature. I wouldn't go overboard on that, but certainly the action has been soft recently. That's not hurting stock markets or bonds or the inflation numbers. Crude today, 69.25. That's the NYMEX crude, so dipping under that 70 dollar level once again. Natural gas, as you know, in terms of at least in terms of U.S. contract, is well down. Not today. It's down slightly in here today, but it's been well down in recent months. And the gasoline price had come well off its highs that we had seen earlier on in the summer. So again, this medium-term correction looks like it's going to continue for a while longer. But I go back to that theme about rising demand. If you want to see a fascinating report that, well, I found it fascinating. It was that last one that I posted before going away. I think it was on the 30th of July or 31st, but it was the interview, not the interview, but the testimony by, from Samsam Bakhtiari, former Iranian member of the oil industry, who's quite a renowned oil expert, just talking about the supply-demand situation. He was speaking at the invitation of the government of Western Australia. It's a terrific report. And he thinks crude oil is going to move to $300 a barrel over the next several years. He thinks natural gas will go to $30 over that time. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that, although I think that the Bakhtiari forecasts are on the most bullish as far as energy prices are concerned, extreme. And then you have the other forecasts that say it's just a cyclical swing, and prices are on their way back to $40. I don't I don't or lower. I don't see that happening, not given the demand that's coming out of the developing world now. Unprecedented demand, as I say, as those countries get their capitalist act together. And of course, we haven't seen any diminution in demand coming from the developed world. And the production of conventional oil, that's drilling a hole in the ground and out it flows, is becoming more difficult as those big fields are gradually run down, or as they have to pump more and more seawater in to raise the oil levels. Okay, ending on the commodity super cycle, or at least the industrial commodity super cycle. So that's pretty much it, and I'll just wish you an absolutely spectacular weekend. I hope to have one of those myself. All the best. Bye bye.